This is Serenade Radio with the best in easy listening. Now here's Mark Stein with Stein's Song of the Week.
It is given to very few composers to say, "Oh yeah, I invented an entire genre of music." But just as Corelli more or less invented sonata form, and Mozart the piano concerto, so John Barry invented spy music.
Sean Connery walking on the screen and lighting a cigarette isn't James Bond, in my view, unless the music's playing alongside him.
My name is Bond. James Bond.
In the first Bond film, there was a theme tune brilliantly arranged by John Barry. In the second film, there was a song, a very good song, but used in the movie just like any old song in any old movie, heard from a transistor radio playing in a London park.
From Russia with love, I fly to you, much wiser since my goodbye to you.
Rush With Love was a great song, and that was the second movie. That wasn't a big hit, but it was somehow one of those songs that everybody knew. Good old Matt singing absolutely beautifully on it. And that must have suddenly, you know, the old light bulb went, yes, hang on, a song, and Goldfinger, wow.
He's the man with the Midas touch. A cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. But don't go in.
But they did go in. And when they did, on that third film, the whole formula that would endure for the next half century fell into place. The pre-title sequence, then the Morris Binder dolly birds twirling around giant gun barrels, accompanied by songs with some of the weirdest titles in the history of music. Goldfinger, Thunderball, Moonraker. And James Bond became the only spy through all the annals of espionage with his own song catalogue.
Cubby Broccoli realised in 1963 that the best way to make a film song work is to get the current hot people to do it. I mean, Lionel Bart wrote From Russia With Love because he was the hot writer. Newley and I got to do Goldfinger because of Stop the World. I got to do a couple more with John. I did You Only Live Twice, and they got Nancy Sinatra to sing it because she'd just done These Boots Are Made for Walking. Paul McCartney, Marvin Hamlisch, Carly Simon, you know, Duran Duran, Sheena Easton.
Leslie Bricus, the co-author of Goldfinger with Anthony Newley and John Barry. And before that we heard from David Arnold, John Barry's successor as James Bond's music maestro on Tomorrow Never Dies, Die Another Day, Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and Tim Rice, Leslie's fellow 007 lyricist. Tim and John Barry wrote the song for Octopussy, although breaking the cardinal rule of Bond theme songs, they did not call it Octopussy. Tim, David, Leslie, all part of Her Majesty's Secret Service songwriting team. 007 reports to M. He gets his gadgets from Q. He is Miss Moneypenny with her hat stand in the outer office. And somewhere deep in the bowels of MI6, for your ears only, there is an impenetrable vault full of songwriters beavering away, mostly lyricists, because for Bond's first quarter century on screen, John Barry had a hammerlock on the music. Don Black has written more 007 lyrics than anybody else, from Thunderball to Diamonds Are Forever to The World Is Not Enough. And he wrote over 100 other songs with John Barry, including the Oscar-winning Born Free.
Whenever I think of John, although I've written so many songs with him, it's the lunches I remember more more than anything else. And it's a funny thing, that, but it's true. When I look back on the Bond thing, I'm sure Tim will know, when you write songs, it's somehow it's where you wrote them. It's not only the writing of it, it's the whole thing. He was always successful. He certainly looked successful from the minute I saw him. He looked great. He had a white Maserati car. He really was cool.
Yeah, he was fabulously cool, and no disrespect, but, you know, songwriters and composers aren't always cool. I mean, often they have cool songs and cool catalogues, but he was like a cool... He could have played Bond if, like, Sean Connery had been hit by the boom in the middle of a scene. He could have been a passable... If you'd met him on the other side of the planet, claiming to be a salesman from Universal Exports, you wouldn't have been surprised, would you?
No, he was certainly there. And, you know, he had all the trappings. He had beautiful women around him, and he had the right drinks. Not shaken and stirred, but, you know, he was very, very special.
John Barry was a big part of London's swinging 60s. He was flatmate to Michael Caine, husband to Jane Birkin, co-owner of a fashionable restaurant with the Queen's cousin and hipster photographer Patrick Litchfield. But I remember the first time I met him finding it odd to hear arcane points of Hollywood orchestration being explained in the vowels of his native Yorkshire. He was born in York, and no matter how long he spent in Beverly Hills and Oyster Bay, he had a blunt Yorkshireman's view of showbiz glamour. On Broadway, as Don Black likes to say, John Barry put the York in New York.
Dr. No was really his first big movie break, wasn't it? It wasn't, this was a kind of bigger deal than what he'd been doing before.
Yes.
Was his first score not Beat Girl, the Adam Faith movie?
Beat Girl was a 1959 low-budget teen rebel movie, a world away from martinis in the Caribbean, except for the music. Listen to these screaming trumpets. Could be on a Bond car chase.
John Barry, he was perhaps the coolest of the lot. You can see that now.
With the pizzicato strings.
Well, he fired away on pop singles in his own right. He was, you know, with the John Barry 7, and he had strange hits like Beat for Beatniks. He was very much being 60s cool before the 60s really got going.
Yeah.
Beat for Beatniks in about 1960, I think. It was sort of Elmer Bernstein meets, you know, the Piltdown Men. It was a strange record, but it was
which is actually a good way of putting his pop style, because it was a strange mix of sort of guitar, rock and jazz.
And a bit of Johnny Dankworth influence, I felt.
Upon reflection, I think I'd modify Tim Rice. Maybe the Piltdown Men, an early rock and roll group, meets Stan Kenton, the great band leader and a man John Barry adored. But this show is called Song of the Week, and a song is music and words, and there are many great composers, great arrangers, great orchestrators who just can't write songs, can't think in eight-bar phrases, can't connect a main theme to a bridge. On Goldfinger, having found the sound of spy music, John Barry was being given his first opportunity to translate that sound into a song. As I said, a song is music and words, and for the words, they turned to Leslie Bricusse and Anthony Newley. They'd formed a songwriting team to write for Newley's stage persona, and they'd done very well with Stop the World I Want to Get Off, a hit show with hit songs. Gonna Build a Mountain, What Kind of Fool Am I? Bricusse and Newley had never written with John Barry, but they used to lunch together every Friday, along with Michael Caine and Terence Stamp, at Leslie Bricusse's restaurant, the Pickwick Club, in Soho. Leslie co-owned it at one point with Sammy Davis Jr., which sounds very groovy, but Sam wasn't always the kind of guy to be in business with. And aside from the lunches, as Anthony Newley once told me, he and John Barry happened to be sharing the same divorce lawyer at the time. And it doesn't get more simpatico than that. Of course, as I suggested to Leslie Bricusse, Barry, Newley, Bricusse, that's a lot of people to write one little Bond song.
What was it like having a third member of the team? I mean, Cole Porter, supposedly said when he was asked what he thought of a Rodgers and Hammerstein number, he said, you mean it takes two people to write a song? I mean,
yes.
But what is it like when there's three?
Well, it was a very, it was just fun to do it because it was the Bond song. You know, we went to John's flat in Cadogan Square and he said, it goes away, he went, bang, 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 and we both went wider than a mile.
Goldfinger.
Wider than a mile.
Goldfinger, Moon River. Well, they're three-note phrases of similar intervals, but John Barry was not amused by Bricusse and Newley's little jest. Usually when a lyricist suggests that the main strain is a wee bit familiar, the composer drops it and does something else entirely different. Especially when, as on this occasion in John's flat in Cadogan Square, that three-note phrase was all he had. But we should all be grateful John Barry kept those three notes and kept plugging away at the tune. John's successor as Bond composer, David Arnold.
Michael Caine has often spoken about, you know, the times he was living in the same flat in Cadogan Square with John when John was trying to get the song from a sort of nascent stage to a completed stage, where he said he'd just be up all night bashing away at it and bashing away at it. And all that effort produces this song, which appears to be effortless.
The music's a piece of cake compared to the lyric. I mean, what are you going to sing about? Leslie Bricusse.
I was intrigued by the challenge of trying to make a lyric with Goldfinger in the work, yes, you know, as the title. And it was easy then because Newley and I were sitting together writing things, so it was just one more little project.
They hadn't seen the film, they didn't know who Goldfinger was, but they had been apprised of the famous scene in which poor dear Shirley Eaton winds up gilded to death by Goldfinger. And after Brickerson newly had pondered that, the phrase "the Midas touch" popped into Leslie's head and the rest of the lyric fell into place. David Arnold again.
Wasn't it Tony Newley said that on Goldfinger that they were aiming for a Kurt Vile kind of approach to the song? Right. And the original Tony Newley sung demo is a very kind of creepy, you know, talking about Goldfinger like he's a sort of creepy kind of guy. And very different to what John obviously came up to.
Yeah. Well, once with, we had with, that with huge, quite a beat as well. Or hip.
Yeah, but it was slightly jazz, but it was very sort of vibes and sort of slowed down and creepy.
Yeah, orchestration and everything. Like it's like a nice little record there, that Anthony
Goldfinger, he's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch, such a cold finger, beckons you to enter his web of sin, but don't go in. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you fear. For a golden girl knows when he's kissed her, it's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you fear. For a golden girl knows when he's kissed her, it's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. He loves only gold, only gold. He loves gold. He loves only gold. He loves gold. He loves gold. That's
such a great little demo. And Anthony Newley was a big pop star at the time, no stranger to the hit parade. But he didn't want to do the song in the film because he thought it was too weird. This from a guy who had had a hit with Pop Goes the Weasel. So they called Shirley Bassey, and just in case she too got weirded out by the song, took the precaution of getting her to agree to sing whatever words were put in front of her. And on the big day in the studio, John Barry was still fiddling with the orchestration, not yet convinced that he'd got the real sound of James Bond.
John just goes, wow, wow. Apparently that answering trumpet phrase was never written until they're actually in the recording studio as well, and he felt that there was a bit of a gap, and so he gets the trumpet sections to use the Harmon Mutes, and it's wow, 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 wow. And from that point on, that was the sound that you make if you make a Bond song.
Goldfinger, he's the man with the Midas touch. Spider's touch, such a cold finger, beckons you to enter his web of sin.
Well, it's got the menace, and also the real reason it works is because it is the name of the villain. It is, there's menace in the music.
But it's got the villain in, but it's also got all the sex in as well.
Best James Bond song I ever wrote was never used. Cubby wanted John and myself for Thunderball, which ended up being done by Don Black, because I was by then doing Dr. Dolittle. But Cubby wanted the song for Thunderball to be called Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was the name that Bond had in Japan, which was a huge market. And we got a terrific song, and it's better than Goldfinger. It's a wonderful song.
He's tall and he's dark, and like a shark, he looks for trouble. That's why the zero is double. Mr. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. He's swung. And he can soothe you like vanilla. The gentleman's a killer. Mr. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang. Damoiselles in danger have filled the stranger's path. Like a knife, he cuts through life. Like every day's a lie. He's from the school that loves and leaves them. A pity if it grieves them. Mr. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang's not a fool. Damoiselles and danger have filled the stranger's path. Like a knife, he cuts through life. Like every day is the last. He's fast.
Well, I don't know whether it's better than Goldfinger, but it certainly sums up the entire conceit of popular songs about secret agents. Mr. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Mr. Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang's not a fool.
Sung by Shirley Bassey. I think the Bond song in the average viewer's head is probably being sung by Shirley Bassey. She has a great acclaim.
I think so. I mean, of course, that was a typical Bond song, but we didn't know it when it came out. I mean, it was the number one of one at the time.
Right.
One of my great regrets is that, with great respect to others who've had a go at it, that Shirley didn't do the one James Bond song I did, because she can make anything sound fantastic.
As Don Black likes to say, Shirley should just sing them all. And he's not wrong on that. I'd have loved to hear her sing Adele's Skyfall song. As to David Arnold and the sound that you make when you do a Bond song, let's flash forward a quarter century to the late 80s and License to Kill. There's a new 007, Timothy Dalton, a new M, a new Moneypenny, a new singer, Gladys Knight. and new songwriters, and yet on the theme song, everyone's still channeling Goldfinger. Harry Saltzman, the co-producer of Goldfinger, didn't see that coming. Back in 1964, he'd hated everything about the number, the band, the tune, the words, and Shirley, and he told John Barry if they weren't so close to the premiere, he'd junk the whole thing and start from scratch with somebody else. A few weeks later, the Goldfinger soundtrack was number one on the Billboard album chart in America. And back in London, Harry Saltzman wandered into the Pickwick Club and saw John Barry, Michael Caine and Terence Stamp having dinner. Saltzman was on his best behaviour with Michael Caine, because he wanted Caine to do his movie The Ipcress File. And then he turned to John Barry and gave a very clenched-teeth, grudging thank you. And Terence Stamp looked up at him and said, "You bleeping bleep bleep." And everyone in the room laughed because everyone in the room wanted to say that to Harry Saltzman. He didn't like Diamonds Are Forever either. Goldfinger set the standard for all the other Bond themes, no matter how goofy the title, go with it. And as they say in John Barry's Yorkshire, give it some welly.
This heart is cold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He loves gold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He loves gold.
A song from Me to You, music by John Barry, words by Leslie Bricus and Anthony Newley, recorded by Shirley Bassey at a grueling all-night session at Abbey Road, at which John was very demanding. And at the end there, he kept making gestures to Shirley to extend that final note on and on. She thought she was going to pass out, but she didn't. Instead, according to Vic Flick, who plays that terrific guitar on the James Bond theme and was sitting behind her, she popped her brassiere. In the digitally remastered version, if you got the big speakers, you can probably hear that. All in service of a big finish. What's that? Not enough? You want an even bigger finish? Well, here's the title song from an otherwise rather undernourished Leslie Nielsen spoof, Spy Hard.
By the way, if you walked in late, allow me to reiterate, the name of this movie is Spy Hard. They call it Spy Hard. You're watching Spy Hard. It's the theme from Spy Hard. Weird
Al Yankovic. On screen, he looks at his watch to check how much longer he's got to hold the note, and then his head explodes. We all got the joke, but really the genius of Bond is that you can't really parody it because it walks such a fine line, trembling on the brink thereof. And having invented the form Ever After, from Diamonds Are Forever with Don Black to A View to a Kill with Duran Duran, John Barry was the man with the Midas touch.
Stein's Song of the Week was presented by Mark Stein and produced for Serenade Radio by Brian Savin.